Welcome back to the podcast from MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. This is episode 4, Organization, part 2 of 2.
Okay, I'm going to show you, if I can get on the internet here, some marvelous thing about Google Docs. How many people know what revisioning is?
Yes.
Revisioning is, it used to be only a thing for people who wrote software code. Because they could really damage some things if they did it wrong. And so what they would do is they would have what they call a repository, a place where they would check out pieces of code work on them and check them back in. The old code was never overwritten. It was always kept in. So we can, if something breaks down, we can go back to a previous version. And wouldn't it be nice if, because even the best backup system in the world that we'll talk about in a minute, if it's not... If it backs up a file that you deleted data accidentally, your data's still gone. Google Docs, for those who don't know, has built-in revisioning. You can go backwards in time with your document. You can also, if you're collaborating with multiple people, you can see the changes other people have done.
Where do the documents reside when you use Google Docs?
They reside in Google Docs. Google Docs is the container. Yeah. And as a drawback of Google Docs, you have to have an internet connection. As you can see, it is a drawback. Mm-hmm. You have to have an internet connection to be able to use it.
So it's in the cloud, subject to their whims.
It is in the cloud, yes. And they do, I suspect that they search through content of your documents, and they'll give you advertisements on the side of your Google searches that are more relevant to you. If you have a bunch of stuff on there about guitars, bunch of files in there about trucks or something, they'll make a note of that. You like trucks, and then you're
even if you're writing horror.
So how do you set up Google Docs?
It's Google Docs is. Do you have a Gmail account?
Yes.
If you have a Gmail account,
if you have a Gmail account, you may not realize this, but you automatically have a Google Documents account. You just have to go to Google Documents, and you can start creating your own documents in there. It's absolutely fabulous for collaboration.
So if you log into Gmail, up here you'll see that you have also a calendar, documents, reader, which is an RSS feed reader, but the Google Docs section. Now here's where they're stored. And like I said, Google doesn't believe in folders and hierarchies. You just throw everything into a big pile and you search for what you want later.
But you can create folders. I have several folders in Google Documents. I have a projects folder. I have a story folder. I have libraries folder. And actually, the stories folder has multiple subsets to it. And I've got folders for all of the role-playing games I'm in, which include all of the various, including the one that I'm running for my children.
And this is because you're so disorganized, right?
I am terribly disorganized. However, because I use Google Documents so much and I have so many of them, I find it useful to just be able to click on the folders on the side that I've created and then bring up all the manuscripts within that folder.
So are they called collections? Is that what their
what their version is collections. Right. And so, you can share your collections with different people. So, for example, my library folder is actually shared with everybody at the reference staff at Washburn Library so that they can all access the story time inventory I did and the various, my collection of all the books I've used for story times and other things. So there's actually an ongoing record of all that material. And they keep wondering why I'm doing this in Google and not Outlook, and that's because I'm part-time and I want to be able to access it from home easily. But they put up with my eccentricity on this matter.
The collaboration in the Google Docs is actually pretty slick if I look at the sharing settings. This is a file that Michael, Miriam, and Abra and I worked on when we did the presentation on social networking. And so we made this document, shared it out. We were all able to go in here and make changes. So there I am adding in some stuff. And let's say Abra, because she's not here, deletes all my good stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, no, I wish she hadn't deleted all my good stuff. So if you go under revision history, This has saved every change that this document has been through, 125 of them to be exact, and we can go back to any point in time that this document existed when you push save. So if you type something in and delete that and type some more things and push save, it makes another version, another revision backed up on Google Docs. And so if you go back in time to like revision 3, now they've got these older and newer buttons. I can step through this document in time and see the changes. I don't think you can see the changes are toward the bottom, but we can get newer, and you see the revision level changing, and newer over time, or older. And we can also do this. We can compare a version here with a version later in time and see who made what changes. It highlights Avra's changes in green and my changes in blue. So I can see exactly what was done between these two points in time. Very, very slick. That is one method of revisioning your documents if you save them in Google Docs. Another method would be the manual file name.
You can also do track changes if you do Microsoft Word. Mm-hmm. If you have, you know, take your, like, I don't do it because I'm actually a burn the bridge kind of girl. If you want to save a previous version, if you save that and then you start a new one with all your revisions, you can create all your revisions. It will track every single revision, and then you save that, and then you save, do a save as, and then you accept all changes. Then you will have the old version with all of the revision notes tracked on them, and then the new version, which is now clean and all the changes have been saved.
Excellent.
One thing I will point out about Google is they have absolutely no shame in stealing anything that you put on through their system. And will, if you come up with a book manuscript, it'll appear in the Book Partners program, whether you want it to or not.
Really, that's from Google Docs, if I save something to Google Docs?
Well, Google Docs, I'm not sure about. That's something that came after the Book Partners program. I opted to have a book in their Book Partner program, and digitally I sent them the first 5 chapters, and they wanted a hard copy book as well. I thought it was just to verify that it was a self-published book. They scanned the book, and now, against my wishes and many demonstrations of I'm upset, the whole book is listed. So Google is wonderful in a lot of ways, but realize that it's the internet, and everything you put on the internet can be downloaded by someone and used.
No, your Google Docs, you can set your sharing preferences.
Right, I set my sharing preferences to 49 pages. The whole book is there now, and they insist it's not.
So that's something to be aware of if you're sharing.
Is that Z for xenophobe?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's one thing. I think recently they've been nailed on it so hard that they've kind of reset. They used to default to it. You know, when you put stuff up, it was public. And Google's thing said, you know, if you make this public, it'll be shared, basically, or other people can see it. They used to default to public. And I think now, at least I know for calendars, they got nailed on it because some people were using it for corporate. And, you know, here business meetings, you know, from some big wigs were getting put out on the internet for people to see because they defaulted to public. Now, supposedly, they default to private and you have to choose to make it public.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Millennium Copyright Act has actually completely cleared them from any responsibility if they take your image or your manuscript or what have you. They can't be found guilty of being co-infringers anymore, so there's less incentive for them to do that than there used to be.
So it looks like the default now is private, because when we created this document, I didn't even look. I created this document and I did not even look. Looks like it's set to private. Only the people listed below can access. Whether you believe that or not, I don't know. Google is evil. I won't lie. But they got lots of good free stuff, so...
But their motto is, don't be evil.
Don't be evil.
Don't be caught being evil.
Don't be caught, yeah.
And I didn't think Google Docs had a software that you could download so you could work offline on your docs and it would synchronize.
You can, and I don't...
You download it, it downloads just fine. There is some formatting that gets lost between Word and Excel if you're doing stuff that's really specialized. So, like, sometimes you might lose footnotes and crap like that. But other than that, it seems to be really good at going back and forth between the basic things, having used it, shifting back and forth between library documents for the library folder. This is an area where I've actually used it a lot, and it seems to be just fine doing this, all the simple stuff. The 90% of what you want to do transfers just fine.
There is a program called Google Gears. Is that what you're talking about?
It might be.
Where it synchronizes. It is a truly offline version of your online stuff, and you can work with it, and then when you marry up to the internet, then the stuff syncs. I don't recommend that. Okay. I have tried it, and it is futzy. Manually downloading and uploading files seems to work much better, like she said.
Yeah, I hadn't used it. I just thought I read something about they had one that worked that way. But
the other thing, and being an IT guy, it kills me to tell you this, but you can actually email yourself a copy of your document. It's a fairly efficient revisioning system. It's still manual, but and I say that because IT guys, their email server is overhead. The space on it needs to be, he knows, the space on it needs to be, email was not made to do this. I won't bore you with the details, but yes, you can actually email yourself a copy of your own work in progress, label it, and it is a pseudo-revisioning system.
Just make sure your email is backed up too.
Yes, and we'll talk about that. This was a picture I took of some hanging file folder in a modular tub that would be useful for people who want to start with the hard copy storage. Hanging file folders really are the way to go. I did, this was a long time ago, I had the tabs spread out like this. Don't do that. Put them all down the one side. The reason I say that is once you put this, you're locked into the system, and now I can't put a file in there. Only took a couple times of doing this for me to realize the truth. Yeah, don't. It looks great. You can see all the tabs at once. It's great. Don't do it.
But those are movable tabs. You can take them out.
You can move them anywhere along. There's little slots here on the sides.
Right, so you can realign.
And you know what? That's only for if you're a type A personality. Yeah. See, I start out doing those little layers and stuff. And then I add new files in, and I don't care if the tabs don't line up. So you can add them all you like, and so long as you don't care.
There you go.
You just have to realize that this is your own neuroses that's speaking right here.
But these tubs are really inexpensive. The file folders might be slightly more expensive, but if you steal one a month from work... I didn't say that.
All right. You can also find them in thrift stores.
Yeah, in thrift stores. I mean, there's...
Your work
there's
is going to come after you after
cheaper work. Cheaper alternatives, yeah. Keep your backups off-site. As an IT guy, again... making the disk or the USB drive, some people have mentioned, and keeping it right there next to your computer protects you from some possible losses of data, but not all of them. Getting your backups off-site does a lot more. If your house gets lifted by a tornado and scattered to the winds, and you had your documents packed up, they're still gone. If your house burns down, if somebody steals your stuff and steals your USB drive, your stuff is still gone. So... if you're going to make backups, keep them off-site. One way you can do this is, somebody mentioned they take the drive to work. Was that you? Took your?
I bring my CDs to work.
You bring your CDs to work. Yeah. Very good idea. Taking your stuff and burning it to disk, sure. But get it away from the house. Put it in a safe deposit box. You can swap, if you want some social pressure, you can do a data swap with someone, and on a periodic basis say, we're going to meet in a public place. Swap disks or drives or whatever.
Fuck out my briefcase. You set down your briefcase.
Yes. Exactly. And
both
then,
have to wear trench coats.
Yeah.
Again, email copies to yourself is another way to keep it off-site. Google Docs, we've mentioned. But the real beauty is automation. I love when I can automate things and not have to think about them anymore. Many of your internet service providers, also known as ISPs, offer you some free online backup utilities, and I recommend you take advantage of these. They give you some free space online. Often you'll see the word encrypted used, so if you're paranoid about people looking through your data, look for the word, is this data encrypted offsite? And it's free. Mozy also is a popular one that is free. I don't know how much storage space they give you. Carbonite's an industrial strength one. I installed that, and they're all pretty much the same. There's folders on your hard drive that get synchronized up to the cloud, up to a space in the cloud. So you make your changes to your files, and those files get sent up. It's marvelous. And then once you set it, you are storing off-site, and you're storing always, not just often. You are storing all the time. So you make a change, the backup program is running in the back of your computer, knows that it needs to sync up. Now, obviously, if you have a lot of data and a slow internet connection, this isn't going to be very attractive. If you're offline a lot, it might not be as attractive, but still... even better, anybody use multiple computers to work on their documents?
I have way too many computers.
I do, and I can tell you, between work and home and laptop, and some people might even have a mobile that they want to sync things to, automated sync is becoming more popular. It's not just backup. It syncs up to the cloud, sure. Now that data ports down to other computers. So any computer that you install in the system now becomes synchronized with all the others. So I make a change on this laptop, that change will percolate up to the internet and go down to my home computer and my work computer. So now am I saved, you know, my data is saved in multiple locations automatically. So the sync, I would say, if you're using multiple computers, far better. I recommend SugarSync. I have a detailed, if you look at the handout at the very bottom right-hand corner, I did a detailed comparison of SugarSync versus Dropbox, and I recommend SugarSync, but Dropbox is worthwhile too. Dropbox gives you 2 gig of storage space for free. SugarSync gives you 5.
So are those free tools then?
They are free.
Oh. Windows Live also has a free sync and offline storage system.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I used to use something called Mesh, which did the same thing. If you're using all Microsoft products, all Windows Vista and newer, you can use Mesh, and it does that same thing that I was just saying, synchronize all your stuff. Plus, it gives you some remote control options of other computers, which is pretty cool. Sadly, it doesn't run on Windows XP anymore, which is why I didn't even think to add it on here. I've just moved away from it.
My problem is that I have XP and some newer operating systems.
Exactly, that's where I'm at.
It doesn't work on all of them. The beta actually is still working.
And not for long.
Not for long. They're about to phase it out.
Yeah.
But that's been really nice. I'll look into those.
I raved about that for years, and I wish there was something to take its place or that would work. These all work with XP. As a matter of fact, Dropbox even works with Linux.
I did want to add a caution, though, about encrypted offsite storage, which is make sure you don't have your password just written down somewhere where when the fire comes.
Password. I'm going to show you guys how to make an awesome password. Oh, I can't write on here.
SyncToy, which is a simple-minded program for Microsoft products, is an easy way to sync without going to the cloud. And
sync between like your external drive or a network drive.
Or two computers on a home network.
Yep. Passwords, yes. You want to have a good password if you're storing all your stuff up to the cloud, encrypted or not. You want a good password, and here's how you can make a password that's really good. Song lyrics. Take your favorite song, Talking Heads, I've Got a Girlfriend That's Better Than That. If you write the first letter off each of those words, it's something you won't forget. It's something that's just gibberish. Make one of them a capital letter and add an exclamation point to the end, and you've got an awesome password. But make sure it's like at least 8 characters. Computers now are getting so fast that they can run through 8 character passwords pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I usually put in 2 or 3 of the extra characters, not always in the same place. Another thing is take 2 words, run them each letter after the other, but reverse one word.
Sure.
And put in a few extra characters. Put numbers in.
Words straight out of the dictionary are asking for trouble.
But if you take 2 words and intercalate them with 1 word backwards.
Yeah, but go every other.
There's no way. And then put in a non-alphanumeric character.
The point is, have a system that would allow you to recreate a password.
And remember it.
Right. Just to ask, has anyone here had their password broken and stuff taken?
I just had a friend who, we got an email yesterday that him and his wife were in Madrid, Spain, and got mugged, and they needed $3,000.
Oh, yeah. That one goes around. That happened to Naomi Kritzer, actually. She had everybody on her Gmail contact list got...
Well, but the contact lists are public. Everybody
emailed.
In here, your list is public. Mm-hmm.
She got basically hacked.
I can use passwords from the area where I grew up, from street and road names, and telling people that isn't going to, it may not help much, because, for example, nobody would expect a town of 300 people to have a 42nd Street. It's the only numbered street.
So this is kind of tangential, but from a security standpoint, what would be your perspective about having, check this, okay, a super duper long complicated password that you commit to memory, but it's the only password you use for every single account that you have?
No. See, and there's a danger that if somebody manages to get that password off a site that's not very secure, because you're relying on the security of the site that you go to, the way I view that, I do that system. I have a long, complicated password that my hands know more than my brain does, and I add a letter to it based on the site. So say you're logging into Gmail, started with a G. If you're logging into Microsoft, start with an M. You know, or just change it just a little based on the site, and you can still recreate it. So that's one way to get around it, but I don't recommend using the same password for everything in your life.
I use the same pattern on every site, but it's not the same password. So if I'm doing my Google, I might split up the word Google in a particular pattern. You know, use a certain number of letters, stick the same number in the middle, and then I have a number I add at the end based on something.
Oh, everybody's giving away their secrets. Online.
Things to try.
Things to try. Hack into everyone's account.
Yeah, just for the heck of it, why don't you guys kind of, let's hear those passwords.
No. What I described is similar to my system, but not identical to my personal.
Oh, yeah. Good backtrack.
But that way, I have a different password on every site I go to, but I don't have any trouble remembering it. And you can't really deduce one from the other.
It's a Conrad system. It's easy to leave yourself a cue, because you could put on your desktop a photo of the album or the song that's interesting to you, and just a picture.
Sure.
Of
did everybody understand what I meant by that? Do an acronym of song lyrics?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing is the encryption is when you do your passwords, think of your letters or your numbers in blocks, 4 or 5 characters, and then put a control character in after that, which is what a typical encrypted code would look like. So you can encrypt your own words.
Adding in punctuation is really raises the security level of your password significantly.
I sometimes use leet speak, where E becomes a 3 and T
becomes
a 7.
Exclamation point.
So
no one would ever think to try that.
Oh, absolutely! But, you know, it's a lot better than using just the alpha.
I had just recently heard of this program just this week. I have not tried it. It's called Backupify. And we're talking about moving all our stuff up to the cloud and things like Google Docs and Gmail that are in the cloud. How do you back these things up? Well, if you download them to your computer, now you still have the same problem. Now you have more problem, because now you have to download it and put it to a disk and bring it to your friend's house or get it off-site. Their program Backupify is free, and it will sync from your Google Docs and your Facebook and your Twitter accounts, all your data over to another area in the cloud on Backupify. And therefore, if you delete all those old angry posts to your ex, you can still get them back. They're over in Backupify. And it's automatic and it's out of the way. It doesn't, it just...
I wouldn't want to back up my Facebook. I'm sorry. I don't want it back up.
If it's that important to you to recreate all those Twitter posts, I don't know, but there you are. But it does back up Gmail and Google Docs.
If I was using it for business, I could see it, but yeah.
It does back up Google Docs, so that might be...
When my friends are posting about their toenail clippings or whatever it is that they're posting about, it seems to be, for the most part, the utterness of trivialness in Facebook.
Anybody else have any file backing up methods?
Well, I've used a very simple... Do you remember the old fetch systems?
No.
Oh, that's a free, simple free program. Usually your ISP will provide you, back when I started out, like 5 megabytes. But for text, that was fine. I just had a fetch system, and I got an address that was... like a members, tcp.net, blah, 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 blah. And the fetch system would allow me to upload and download stuff from that. And, no fuss, no muss. And I think, most ISPs give you a fantastic amount of space to store stuff these days.
Yeah.
This was like 7-8 years ago. But fetch is, it's just a direct to and back, and nobody shares it.
Because the internet speeds are increasing and storage space has always been fairly cheap, especially for documents. 2 gig that Dropbox offers or 5 gig that SugarSync offers, I can't imagine filling that with writerly stuff. It would be pretty amazing.
Text packages are really tiny. Yeah. So.
The only comment that I would add is the other big advantage, and you essentially said this, I think, Conrad, of offline storage, is it isn't vulnerable to the delete that, oh no, I didn't mean to delete. So it's good to have a grandfather, father, son sort of a hierarchy that you're running, and at least one of those offline, so an error or a malicious event cannot access your final file.
Something I forgot to mention about SugarSync and Dropbox, they also do revisioning of your files. So here's my online storage. I can get at this from any computer, and I back up much more than just my writing stuff. I actually paid for an account on SugarSync. So under my writings here, you get to see how organized I am, or am not. Any particular file that I can get at here, I can go into more and see versions of this file. So again, like I showed you on the Google Docs, I can go back in time. SugarSync saves the last 5 versions. I can tell which computer they came from. This one here came from my computer at home. The rest have come off of my laptop. So I can go back 5 versions of this file forever. I mean, if I never change it again, these 5 sit there. They do not count toward your storage space. Dropbox does it differently. They revision everything. I mean, every change, every time you hit save, another revision of the file is kept. But they're only kept for 30 days. So that's why I prefer SugarSync, because I look at this as more of a disaster recovery. And if you made a mistake when you saved your file last and you put it away for 2 years, mm-hmm. Now I've still got 5 versions of the file. In Dropbox, after 30 days, those backups are gone. Dropbox does offer a pack rat service that keeps all your revisions, every one of them. I do not know how much it costs, but if you are the kind of person who needs that level of security, I'm sure they're willing to take your money for it. So,
SugarSync been around for a while? Dropbox, I've heard of for a while.
I don't think so. I think they're cheaper to compete with Dropbox, because Dropbox is getting a lot of press right now. Mm-hmm. So, and they have the iPhone app and the Android app and all that stuff, so you can easily upload things to them. So moving on to dates. Storing dates and such. Deadlines, expirations, and knowing when your publication rights fall back to you are things that writers end up working with. Obviously, there's the paper calendar that's been around for a while. Excel spreadsheet or Google Docs spreadsheet should be obvious. There was a program called Sonar. Am I right? Is that? I think this is in the wrong spot. This is me being disorganized. This is actually manuscript tracking, submission tracking. Sonar and the Writer's Market have utilities that let you track your submissions to, say, you're submitting to a magazine or to an advertising, or a contest, and you want to remember when that contest is over to know that you didn't win, or you want to know when your publication rights fall back to you. These are some programs that will do it. These are listed on the handout as a reference. I use Gmail's calendar, which I won't show you, but you can set appointments and have it text you or email you when that appointment comes due, or as far in advance as you like. So I could set an appointment for 3 years out and have me notify me by text a month ahead of time that, hey, the rights for this book are coming back to you. You can resubmit it or publish it on your own. So these are just some ways that you can do that. Do anyone else have systems of date scheduling, organization, or tracking manuscript submissions? Anybody else do that?
I use a spreadsheet, but I've been considering developing a Lotus Notes application because I use notes in my work, and it would be trivial to have a little database where you have an entry for each submission.
I actually considered doing an Access database. I did not like Sonar. I tried it out, and I didn't like it. And the Writer's Market one, I should point out, is a paid service. You have to subscribe. I believe it's $20-$30 a year, something like that. And it gives you also access to their, obviously, the Writer's Market series of books. But they have this manuscript submission tracking software that comes with it. So I haven't been able to try that. Maybe. Does anybody remember that? Anybody use that?
No. Maybe you and I should collaborate to develop the requirements for a web-based system that would
I was thinking of that.
Very nice.
Because nowadays...
I could put that up. I mean, I've got a website I can
Through MySpace or through
through Bluehost.
I think that would be a useful thing because I didn't see. I looked around and I actually considered doing it myself because I didn't see any products that I really liked. But the Gmail is just another appointment.
Pages,
that's what I do for my personal life.
They're not
life,
awesome. If you're going to be doing a program, you're probably going to want to just have a link from our site to the program. We were discussing about the extra pages on the Meetup site and. I was saying they're pretty rudimentary as to what you're allowed to plop on to those pages. They're useful for us, but it's more like promo stuff and things like that, or notes rather than actual. I think program. I think we'd want to put some.
Yeah, I was surprised not to come across any online, really online systems like what you're talking about somewhere that you can store and. Keep revisions and submit them, and maybe auto submit if the date comes up and this hasn't cleared, then submit to here or something. So, plots are another thing, and I this kind of falls under support writing where you're writing about writing. When I first started writing, I did not plot at all. I truly just chased the muse and just typed whatever I was typing in. Literally 238,000 words later, I got to the end of my novel and realized that it was preposterously large, and went back and realized that there were subplots that didn't resolve, and I realized that there were characters that could be combined, and what ended up happening was I organized it after I wrote it. Somebody had mentioned this earlier today, that they had organized their stuff after. So that's when I realized you could plot after you wrote your story. And the example, the analogy I thought of was an ice sculpture. You can create the form for the ice sculpture and fill it with water and let it freeze and take the structure away. And you've got the other way to do it is just to pour out a bunch of water into a giant ice blob and carve away to get to the thing. That's the two methods. And if you're plotting beforehand and taking the time to build this structure around the thing, you're building a form for it. It's going to take you more work on the front end, but it's then you won't have as much to cut at the end. If you're plotting after the fact, you're going to have a lot of stuff to throw away. The one plotting thing everyone should have, and I'm not saying everybody needs to plot, but whether you do it before or after, everyone should have an elevator pitch for their story. Hopefully everyone knows what the elevator pitch is. It's the president of Bantam Books jumps in the elevator with you and you've got till the third floor to tell him what your book is about, and that, you know, you should be able to sum it up pretty quickly. That is a structural, it's a kind of a structural thing, it's kind of a focus thing where, and you should have it written down somewhere, so you post it on your web or send an email to someone.
Isn't that what the red stop button in an elevator is
for? Isn't that why President Banta Books goes around in disguise?
Patricia C. Reedy and always works from a plot outline. She never sticks to it. She has to keep revising it, but she can't. And but she can't work without the plot line. Yeah, plot outline.
Some people can. Some people need that structure to write. And okay. I thought it was more like...
As I say, she never sticks to it.
Yeah. I thought it was more like putting the muse in a straitjacket and now write me something. You know, it just seemed contrived to me. I would rather just write where I'm comfortable in the story and what I feel like writing and just let it go. And then later carve it back. It's just more work. It's just a lot of work. I didn't realize that. I thought it was done. And I really just started. So.
It's kind of like I think they call it a discovery writer.
Discovery writer.
Yeah. I found I'm a mix of the two. If I just let myself write, I will meander. Mm-hmm. So I have to give myself little guidelines. Here's kind of where I want to be there and let myself meander and keep on track.
And is this something you're going to discuss at your next, at the next meeting? Was it about plotting or was it about...
Our next one's character. So if we have time, I'll mention the one I've been playing with.
Okay. Yep, Dan.
Okay, I have a problem. I think stories out in kinesthetic, tactile, visual diagrams, which is a little difficult to get down on paper. Especially in three and sometimes four dimensions.
I don't think they've made that tool yet, Dan.
Help you organize that one, I'm sorry.
So the holodeck is
invented. It might be doable as sculpture. But...
Or interpretive dance. The other method of plotting that you'll want to store somewhere is the cover copy for the back of your book, back of your novel, a little bit longer than the elevator pitch, just a couple paragraphs that tell people about your story. You might get asked to do a detailed outline if you get published. Publisher won't know what they're getting into. If they're going to give you an advance, you'll probably end up writing some longer version, and this can be pretty long, I've heard. On a 200-page book, it could be up to 30 pages that you're handing them of just outline. Timelines. I do a lot of timelines and a lot of maps. These are the kinds of things that will be supporting your plots that you'll have to store somewhere. One method of storing them is note cards. Note card method comes kind of from storyboarding movies, where you write out each scene on a separate note card, and you can who's in the scene, where the scene takes place, and then organize them accordingly, and they can be shifted around to get interesting effects. So you could save them on physical note cards.
I think Maggie had said at one point that she uses that with one of those three-ring binders with the card slots, so she can reorder them and keeps them nice and organized so they don't get jumbled.
Excellent. I'm thinking an index card like a recipe box or a file holder. You can just kind of keep them in there that way.
And if you like it virtual, if you do PowerPoint slides in, you know, with big type, yeah, go to the slide view, they're sure. Essentially sortable note cards.
Sure.
There are writing tools that have that too. Like screenwriting ones do, and then I think they've made some non there. Where you can go back and forth between your page view and your note and your
note. Sure. Card. There's a program called Celtics there's a link on the handout that is a screenwriter, more geared towards screenwriters, although if you were using note card method, you could use that. The snowflake method is made up by this guy, Randy something or other. He wrote Writing Fiction for Dummies, and there's a link to that, too. It's a program you can use. Actually, it's a method, and you can use the method with any paper or digital system you want, but he also has a piece of software that you can download that stores it all for you. So it goes through the construction of your story, and it basically starts simple and gets more complicated as you go, and it will, that program will create the files for you. YWriter is another one. Celtics, I just mentioned, was made more for screenwriters, but it is awesome if you're doing any kind of video project or something, collaboration and developing your characters' backstories. If you want to treat your novel or your story more like a movie, this is some great software, and it is free. The Snowflake software you do have to pay for, but the method is online and that's free. I use Evernote. Does anyone here use Evernote? Absolutely essential. If I had to pick between Microsoft Word and Evernote, I would give up Microsoft Word because it's so easy to work with. So over here, I've got a list of folders. It works kind of like email. You make these folders, and then here's the notes, and then underneath is the detail within each note. So here, for instance, I have a character that I created for one of my novels. I save all my characters. You can tag them, so I've got this tag characters here. So all my characters show up under one automatically created folder called characters. If I find pictures of characters that I think remind me of this character physically or otherwise, I'll cut them and paste them into here. It saves pretty much any kind of file you can imagine, documents, graphics, text. And then I'll come up with descriptions. I don't know how many people get this detailed with their characters, but I write an entire backstory, motivations, history. Here I have this character. I compared what she's going through into the hero's journey, really above and beyond, but also with organizing. I started using this for work and other areas of my life. GSD is getting shit done, by the way. So in this series I'm writing here, I did this as a test last night. Evernote runs in the system tray here, and I can do a screenshot, clip screenshot, so I can grab any piece of my screen, and it saves it up to Evernote. Now, while we're talking, this is all being synced up to the cloud, too. So this is now available on Evernote's website when I log in up there, and it's also synced out to any computers that I install Evernote on. So that's why it's just really, really easy to work with. And if you can work an email program, you can work this. And this is where I store all my plot outlines, all my supporting documentation. So I'll do timelines of not just the stories, but release dates, market research, pieces of code for website and stuff. So really, really ridiculously useful. It is also free. You can upload 60 meg per month, which if you're just uploading text, I'd be astonished if you could do that. But if you're uploading pictures, you might be able to hit this hit the 60 meg mark. Then you would have to pay, and I don't know how much it is. It's $5 a month, I think, $60 a year or something like that.
Is it wrong that I'm getting really turned on by this?
No.
It's a personal information system. And it's a personal information database, and the other beauty of it is that it is entirely searchable. So now, when you save things on here like pictures, it will go through and do...
Character recognition,
thank you. So that now I can search for these pieces of text in the graphic file, even though it's not selectable or editable as text. Let's see if it actually works. There it is. It found the word elevator in this graphic that I uploaded. Now, I tried this right away last night, and it didn't work. It looks like it takes some time to process. But yeah, if you take a picture of a stop sign and save it up to Evernote with an iPhone app or whatever, and then you go in here and type in the word stop, it will show up as one of your notes. A marvelous program. Also, in your browser, there is an Evernote plugin. So when you're browsing the internet and you land on a site you want to save, you push this button and it is up to Evernote. It's just grabbed and it's all saved and indexed for you. So a really amazing system that I really highly endorse. So that's what I use for outlining and for plotting, saving all my these things we talked about on the last slide, the plots and other things. So does anybody have any other methods of storing plots or supporting data? Pardon?
Does Evernote work for Macs or only for...
Yes.
It does.
Cool.
Because it's on the cloud.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, but whether they have desktop application... You don't have to use the desktop application. You can just use it online. But, yeah, the desktop, the application will run on Mac or PC, and it all syncs together. All that data just synchronizes.
I wonder about something, and that is I've tried to do some organizing on my computer, and what I found is that the little screen is something of an obstacle, and that if I've got index cards or whatever, then it's so much easier to spread them all out and see them on a big surface rather than having to say, okay, here's this index card, here's the list of index cards, which one is it?
That's something that they mentioned with the note card method, is that people tend to like to put them up on a wall on a cork board or something, mm-hmm. so that they can see them all at once. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Scrivener has that function where you have the note cards, and it actually does have a cork board background and puts the little note cards up.
It's still as old as
being as absolutely. Yes, true. But I found that even having an inch and a half wide, as long as you keep your notes shorter or give it a header that's shorter, I haven't had a problem sifting through them and reorganizing them.
So I just want one of those Minority Report displays where
something like that in a spreadsheet, and I actually printed out my timeline for the book I'm working on right now. I do a calendar timeline of everything, and it is color-coded by point of view character. Yeah, because I have multiple perspective mm-hmm. books. Wow. Mm-hmm. So every color is a character's point of view. And then I figure, and it works for me, because if I say they leave this town on Monday, and I just use date, my arbitrary date, it's going to, they got to travel 60 miles, so it's going to take them a week. So this thing that I want to have happen next can't happen until here, at least, and all these other things are going to happen in between. So by plotting it out on the calendar, I can actually do a timeline. I can take an individual thing, and I can turn it a week later, and then put in the stuff in between, and then this becomes the outline for my story.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, and it's really easy to organize, because then, each of these is that you don't see the
What calendar software do you use for this?
I actually created my own on a spreadsheet, but you can use it with a calendar. You could use it with Google calendars, mm-hmm. Because you can create color-coded, if you have multiple characters perspectives. I mean, the color coding is just for the character side of things.
How far into the future and the past can you go with Google calendars?
I don't know. Most of my books take place within a couple of months, in a couple of months at most. So I can usually take a calendar and just have, this one has 2 months back-to-back with each other, and then, you can just show the month display. And then I just have key things of, Ellie and the gang discover the army or whatever, Kale's come home from his trip, things like that. And that's my key to, okay, this chapter segment. And each of these little things is also a segment of the chapter. So it's each chapter is usually
Meant was, let's say I want to set, if a story is set in 2315, will Google calendars?
It's arbitrary. You don't need to set. It doesn't matter. I have October and November listed. The land that I write this in doesn't have October and November. But I just named those because that reminded me, okay, in October the weather is like this, in November the weather is like that.
Okay.
So in the equivalent months in this particular land, that was my reference point. So you can pick whatever year you want to have. It's an arbitrary, and I don't even have day dates on my calendar pieces. It's just a matter of being able to plot out, and then it really kind of becomes a good reality check, because you realize, okay, my characters, this thing happens before that thing because I didn't take into account their travel time. Mm-hmm. This way you take into account their travel mm-hmm. time, and each of these pieces is an individual cell. So that cell can be cut and pasted wherever you want without altering it at all.
I try.
So none of you keep. So none of you keep track of all this stuff in your head. Okay.
Do you, Dana? Could you upload or sanitize one of those to the file section as something to.
To play with, I can download the template. The template I created is in Excel. Too many vowels.
I would try that date thing, but I can't. I've lost the internet connection again. But I don't know how far in the future you can put things on the Google Calendar.
The internet connection just lasts for 30 minutes, and then you have to read it.
Oh, okay. So how many people like paper? I do a lot of my story ideas, roughs, on paper, and it's tough for me because I like the digital. I like to be able to put the stuff in the system where I can work with it. So What I tend to do.
Another round of applause.
Another round, yes. Yeah. So I used to have manuscripts all over the, or not manuscripts, three-ring binders all over the house. I would have one near the bed, I would have one in the car, I'd have one at work, I'd have one, a small one in my pocket. And I did get to the point where I got frustrated because I couldn't find that great story idea I had, and now it's, it's gone. Turned out it was in the trunk of the car. And I blame Flo, but... yeah, so what I did was that mentality I was telling you about before, the mindset of getting things moving towards their home, I've started doing that with the paper. So when I write it down on paper, I'm treating it like a business card. This is just a temporary, this is just a holder for me for now because I'm not near a computer. And I'm going to move this piece of paper towards the computer and get it into Evernote, get it into the system that I'm going to work with, where it's going to live forever. So I don't know, how do other people deal with that? Do you leave it in paper?
I have a notebook. I have a lot of different ideas, and I have found these notebooks that have a spot at the top for you. So you can write, I can write the story name. If I have an idea for that story, write the story name, or if it's miscellaneous, write miscellaneous. So I can just flip through and see, oh, that's for that story, that's for that story. So I can find my notes fairly easily.
Excellent. One thing I've learned about putting them, taking them from the paper and putting them into this information system is it makes me handle it twice, and I have to think about it again. And sometimes ideas that I came up with that were great aren't so great when you go, oh yeah, and so holding on to things and trying to match them up with your existing system, what you have written down already, like characters or whatever, helps eliminate inconsistencies and stuff. Yeah,
I keep a journal and just writing it sequentially. And if that's something I want to record, I take a post-it note and put a post-it note on it and go back and type it in.
I don't suppose Evernote is open source.
I don't think so.
Because it seems to me like one good thing to do with those pieces of paper is to hold them up in front of your webcam and click the button and create your note out of it.
Yep. You can do that with the Evernote, like Android app. I've been using Catch Notes, but I think I may switch over to Evernote just because you use it.
For those who like the Microsoft products, Microsoft OneNote, I used to use before Evernote. It is it's what you'd expect. It looks and acts pretty much the same as Evernote, but it is a local application. It does not sync, so now you have your problems of file storage and backup and synchronization. But it does the same thing. You can draw pictures in there, and it's sorted by folders and searchable and all that stuff. I don't really recommend it because it costs $60-$80 and Evernote is free, and it syncs, and it's better. So so that's my system. I use paper, and I migrate it towards Evernote where I keep it. I tried doing the scanner thing. Like you said, using your camera phone, I'm actually going to get a camera phone that will let me run the Evernote app so that I can take a picture and have it just go up to Evernote.
I think maybe my next one will have to do that. I've been resisting getting a smartphone.
Yeah, and it is the reason I am upgrading my phone, so I can run Evernote on it. And so we've already been through other stuff, so I think that's about the end of things. The summary, cleanliness not necessarily equal to organization, so don't feel too bad if your area is cluttered, as long as you can get your hands on things when you need them. And if you'd be mindful, your homework is to be mindful, catch yourself looking for things, wasting time looking for things, losing things using the L word, then take a look at that area of your life or your writing and see where you need to apply some organization. A lot of people want to overhaul everything, burn the office to the ground and start over, and I think it's probably easier and more efficient to just start organizing now. Start putting things away, for instance. You're going to use Evernote. Okay, so as you're writing your story and you go grab that paper notebook of stuff where you kept it, then implement it into Evernote. As you're migrating all your business contacts up to Google Contacts or whatever system, do it then as you need it. And eventually things will get better and it won't be such a drastic overhaul. Tags and containers, backup often, try to work with your existing system. So hopefully this was useful in some way or another, and hopefully you all have something written down to, that you can try. And I'll post this sheet up to the message board. And as a matter of fact, I'd like everybody to write down, here's an action item you guys can all do, is go to the meetup message forum and find this meetup listed in the presentations. If you come across other things that we didn't try or things that you've tried from, that you've learned from here that worked or didn't work or better things, add them to the list and keep that conversation running so that future people looking to get organized can just go back to that forum and see what we were able to add to it.
I have a question about Google Contacts. There's a program called Act. But Google Contact, can you put the name, the address, phone number, et cetera, et cetera. Can you then sequentially put down all your contacts with the person to track their personal characteristics, what your business contacts were?
There's a big open section where you can just put notes, where you're talking relationships between people. No.
Okay.
No.
Conrad, also, we have a new, folder in the forum just for presentations. So if you haven't already posted this stuff here, I'd appreciate that.
That's what I meant, yeah. And if you look at the bottom of this sheet, you'll see a link at the bottom in blue is the link to this specific meetup forum page. So that you guys can go there, and that's the page I was talking about. Go there.
That was very organized of you, by the way.
It was up till 5. I wasn't really organized until last night, this morning. So anyway, yeah, if we can keep things running there and add to the discussion and things that work for people, things that didn't work, or new technologies that come up and people want to try, throw it in there. So if we have a future presentation about organization, we have some wealth to draw from that. So. All right, well, thanks everybody for coming.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group podcast. The MinSpec podcast is produced by Aberstaff and Wiebe, recorded and engineered by myself, Conrad Zero. Whether you're an experienced writer who wants to help others, or an aspiring writer who wants to make your writing better, join us on the web at meetup.com/MNSPEC.